God be with you all. While I was serving in the Army, I crashed my vehicle with two other service members inside. We had been going to get some lunch, and one of my passengers was trying to fiddle with the music on my phone. Frustrated, I'd looked over and tried to take it from her, not realizing that I was drifting into the other lane. When I did notice, I panicked, overcorrected, hit a drainage ditch, and flipped my car four times into an empty winter field. I was the only one wearing a seatbelt. I was told later by one of the passengers that I had been sitting perfectly still, gripping the wheel with my teeth clenched and my eyes closed. Well, what the heck was I supposed to do? What are we supposed to do when we are sent barreling towards destruction because of our distractions? That distraction, like many of the distractions in our lives, nearly destroyed me. Thank God he makes us fear to focus on what is important. God doesn't work the way we want him to. He is far too mysterious when he should be certain, far too severe when he should be light, far lighter where he should be heavy. Isaiah says, "He will not shout or cry out or raise his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out." How often we wish he would. It's easy to look around and see all the things you'd break or snuff out. All the injustices you see piled up on those you love every day, and to cry out to God, why not reach out your hand like you've promised? Humiliation, sickness, victimization, injury. And despite however much goodwill one has, we do not have the power to overturn the world. It is easy to see how things ought to be done, how they ought to be fixed up and done right. It's easy to take that and run with it and only remember that God didn't do what you thought he ought to have done when you thought he ought to have done it. But God's ways are not our ways. God is not satisfied with our old ideas of justice and right. God says to us in Isaiah, "I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not yield my glory to another, or my praises to idols. See, the former things have taken place, and new things I declare. Before they spring into being, I announce them to you." God has a hope and a plan for us. What should we have for God? Because it is easy to think of God as a servant, or a big father, or some other human relation that is convenient to us, to rail against or rely on or beg to. He is like those things, but he is not those things. If we only think of him as merely a human relation that we can not touch, taste, hear, or even see, then what is the point of him? Is that hard to hear aloud? And yet how often we think it in our hearts, where only we and God can hear. How are we to pray if we do not understand, do not respond correctly to the presence of God, which is everywhere? Before I joined the church, I looked for God everywhere. It's funny how you can miss something all around you. I was looking for a rational, good God, one who made sense and would resolve all the quandaries and fears that seemed to plague me and every other thinking animal on this planet. When I came to the church and I was told I ought to fear God, that offended me. The world was already scary enough. Why was I supposed to fear the one thing I was also supposed to love? How can I love a God whose voice breaks the cedars, breaks in pieces the cedars of Lebanon, who sits enthroned over the flood, as it says in Psalm 29. Because he doesn't have all the power of the world. He is the power of the whole world. And isn't that a headache to think about? Because God is as much in a breeze as he is in a typhoon. And yet we hear him more clearly in the second, when he shakes us out of our reveries and reminds us who he is and what he can be. We might want a white, snowy Christmas, but God is more than happy to send us his storms, to wake us up with thunder. When our eyes are open to what God really is, what response is there but fear? We can sympathize with John, who says to Jesus in Matthew, "I need to be baptized by you, and you're coming to me?" We want to retreat into his power, into his justice, because we are ignorant of it. Like John, we balk and grow afraid at the worst possible moment. Like a distracted driver, our own practices and habits are suddenly foreign and dangerous. And yet Jesus insists, saying, "Let it be so now. It is proper for us to do this to fulfill righteousness. For God loves truth and despises falsehood, as he wishes us to. And the fear of God is truth. It is the natural, necessary response to the realization of the presence of God. When your world or car is tumbling end over end, fear is quite appropriate." And here's the thing which continually chooses to maintain the world, to not have it fall into oblivion. How terrifying to be in the hands of the living God. How much we can now value God's gentleness, that he won't even break a bruised reed. And how much more important are our hearts, to know, to remember that bodily death and spiritual death are in his hands and not ours, that we are already condemned by our injustices. When God reminds us of that, he robs us of our confidence, our presumptions, our hard hearts. He reminds us who he is and what we are. He reminds us of our utter weakness and his complete strength. And yet he does not use that strength to crush us as unworthy vessels. He invites us to baptize him, not for our own sakes, but for his. It is not our fear and trembling he loves, but that these things are the results of seeing the truth, that we are not afraid to go into the world and do his will, nor afraid to cling to him when we inevitably fail. For God has said in Isaiah, "I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness. I will take hold of your hand." Despite our weakness, he insists on involving us, on using us for his works. For that's the really odd thing. We are so much less than God, and yet he desires us. He desires us to be filled with truth, charity, and love, to become vessels of his goodness. And he gives us his powers to do it. Not to the proud or the haughty or the big talkers like me, but to the people who know in their hearts before it curdles in their heads. In that car crash, the vehicle was destroyed, totally useless. But all three of us made it out without serious injury. We rolled over four times, no seat belts, and the worst thing was a mild concussion. Through my own incompetence, I had nearly killed three people. What had I done to earn that? Only a bit of inattention. And what had I done to earn us all walking away? Nothing. And suddenly all the normal things were gone or foreign. The vehicle that had seemed so solid and reliable reduced to a crushed glass-toothed skeleton. God loves truth, and he loves the truth in us. And the truth is that God is scary. He is so scary that once you see him, the fear of death is blotted out. Like John, you are infected with such a great, real fear that everything else becomes ephemeral and laughable. In fear of God, we are freed from our fear of death, injury, humiliation. We are freed from our petty obligations, the chains that keep us bound to this horrible world. When we're able to see the world for what it is, an expression of God's continual love. Once you see what the world is, how can you respond to it with anything but love and gratitude and fear? Once you see how impossible the normal things are, how can you ever take them for granted again? That is the proper fear of God. To always remember him and his power and his mercy in not exercising it on us. Like a person driving a car, we cannot let our focus slip and allow ourselves to become slipshod in our thinking and sentiments. When you keep the fear of God in your heart, how can you be cruel to another of God's creatures? How can you inflict what the greatest of things has withheld from you? Do not lose faith. Keep the fear of God in front of you to free yourself from distraction. And remember the Father that is watching you with a heart full of love.